Now back to Heatwave Sports. Here's Tom Barton and Tim Unglesby.
Final hour, Heatwave Sports on a Sunday night. Tim Unglesby, special guest, Rob Mish. Rob, we were talking UNLV before the timeout. So naturally, we'll turn to the football side of it. You followed the whole Tony Sanchez era here at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And Saturday, another blowout loss. Not bowl eligible anymore. What's going to happen here? Because the proverbial hot seat is scorched. There's nothing there. I mean, I don't think he should have gotten this year. I understand why he did.
Yeah.
Now there's, I mean, obviously, if you look at the fans of the program, they don't want him anymore. You talk about cycles. Tom talked about cycles and about the UNLV basketball.
Yep.
It's even worse on the football end of it. And I don't know if, maybe it isn't. Maybe he just can't coach at this level. I don't know. That's not my job to make those decisions. But do you think it's time?
Well, you know, we're talking about the hot seat, and that's not just hyperbole, because the AD, Desiree Reed-Francois, said after last season that this team has to be bowl eligible for him to retain employment. So
Right. They
are not going to be bowl eligible, so the writing would be right on the wall. And probably inevitable. And what he's done with the new facilities and the training complex is beyond what anybody there could ever have hoped for. But, you know, if facilities kept you employed and translated directly to victories and winning and postseason success, then the Mendenhall Center would have directly translated to fantastic success with UNLV basketball the last few years. Well, it surely hasn't. So it's not just about facilities. People can bark and bitch about facilities, and they're not up to par and this and that. Well, okay, what about when they are up to par, and what about when they exceed par? It seems like this thing is going to do that. It seems like it's pretty special, but that's not going to guarantee success. So kind of a double-edged sword there, and it's too bad. But, yeah, I think he's out of his depth here. And I think that was blatantly shown 2 years ago when Howard came in here.
Yeah.
What were they, a 43-point dog, and they won outright. If you have a piece of UNLV sheepskin, you must be just still so embarrassed by that singular loss.
I think the problem is that they always talk about, well, you need to get a big name in here that can draw recruits. And any big name looks at the administration of UNLV and laughs. They know they're not. You know, nobody. In my opinion, it's not a obviously, academics is number one. We all know that. But from a sports side of it, I don't even know if it's the people that are in the AD role. Maybe they're just puppets. I think somebody's pulling strings. And
It's turnstile U.
Yeah.
With the president's office in the very top office at the AD, it's nothing but musical chairs. And Desiree, I bet she makes this hire for football. And I bet she's thought of very highly at UCLA. And might even get that gig. So her last act here, what if it's hiring a football coach? And what if it's Jim Mora, who we last saw at UCLA? He does a great job broadcasting. But I was watching Urban Meyer in the studio over the weekend. And they're so out of place, aren't they? Urban Meyer belongs on the field, directing teams.
Yeah.
And so it appears he might be ending up at USC. But I heard Jim Mora. I forget which game he was doing over the weekend, but that's the name that's been bandied about. You know, say he gets the gig here, you know he's using it as a stepping stone.
Right.
If he has 4 years of success, you know he's taking that and going on to a Power 5 team, wherever the opening is. So it's kind of a constant game, isn't it?
So I just thought of this when we were talking. I kind of melded together UCLA and UNLV. We'll go back to the basketball. When Otzelberger was hired, there was a name out there that I kind of wanted to see get the job here.
Can I give you his initials of what I think you're talking
Absolutely.
About?
Absolutely.
MM?
No.
Oh,
but
okay.
That's another one.
Okay,
though, but
okay.
How about SA? How about a former UCLA guy, Alford?
He wound up in state, didn't he?
Right. Yeah. And that's what killed me about it was I'm like, look, people can say what they want about Steve Alford.
Yeah.
The guy won. Where he won at New Mexico, right? He won at Iowa. UCLA, he was winning, right? I mean, you know, he had good teams there, but
yeah, but there's just always so much more to the story, isn't there?
And there was
so much more to his story too. Right at the introductory press conference, oh, it couldn't have gone any worse. Almost by the end of that conference, you wanted him to just come down and fire him. Let's just cut to the chase, make it circular, and get rid of it, because obviously stuff at New Mexico reared its head, and he was asked about it, and that is not very good stuff. So the details don't need to be repeated here, but it was just awkward and ugly, and you knew that was ill-fated. Mm-hmm. He was out of his depth. Most people are at UCLA. It's a tough gig. It is a boy. It's bad. Although now they're stepping up and paying money, so that offsets kind of the issues everybody ends up dealing with there. But it seems like Nevada is a second chance state. Okay, you need another chance, come here, show you're worthy, and then after 3 years, you'll move on to somewhere else. So yeah. I think that's just the way it is. It's a mid-major, and will always be, probably. But I'll tell you what, with the advent of the School of Medicine, it really is raising the educational profile of this university. You put that together with the law school, the business school, the world-class, the travel. The hotel industry?
Yeah, yeah. Hotel administration.
There's a lot of premier schools here, and that's what you need to raise your profile so that the day that the Pac-12 decides to expand, they're looking at not your last 5 years on the football field. They're looking at your overall academic profile and where you stand among other elite institutions. That is what led the Big Ten to getting Rutgers and Maryland. Mm-hmm. Not how they've been doing on the athletic field, but exactly what are you going to bring to this conference, elite education-wise. And that's what UNLV is doing very right. I don't know what that means. Does that mean in 10 years the Pac-12 is going to extend to the Pac-14 and maybe let in San Diego State and UNLV, possibly? Well, you never know. Maybe. But there's other things that are involved with getting there as opposed to being a lifelong mid-major. That's what it takes. And so the picture's much bigger, you know, Tim?
Would you not have been a fan of UNLV hiring Steve Alford?
Well, he did well at New Mexico, which is the level that maybe he should be coaching at, for sure. Maybe he was going out of his depth at UCLA, like I said, and he returned to where he can dominate. Not dominate, but at least be very successful. So I bet he does well up there. It's not going to be immediate because they lost so much.
Right. I think he's going to do well.
Mm-hmm. You think he's going to do well right away?
No, I think that we'll see pieces of his. Mm-hmm. Look, if you look at his teams, they play a very specific style of basketball, and I think you'll see this year be his transitional year. But they'll be back up there, and I almost kind of want to see it happen because I don't want Otzelberger to fail. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
I thought Alford was the perfect hire here, and his name was just kind of laying out there, you know, and it's just like. I never even heard any mention of it. Like any rumor mill say, oh, you know, he's or Steve Alford, maybe they're interested in each other. They hire Osterberger, then all of a sudden he's in Reno, and I'm like, geez, just what we need, right?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think after UCLA, his UCLA chapter, he's going to find it in Reno. I know he already probably thinks this and knows this, but he's going to be able to breathe up there and get back to what works for him. And you're right. I bet he does find success sooner than later.
So, sad that news came out that, as you know, Tim Chambers passed away, and I believe you said tomorrow you'd be attending the memorial. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to, you know, you spent a lot of time with him to do your book about Bryce and CSN. So I was wondering maybe you can just tell a couple stories about Tim being on the road with them. I mean, you spent a whole summer with these guys.
Season.
It's crazy. Whole season. Yeah,
every day. Boy, I look back at that, and it just was going so fast. In real time, you don't really get chances to kind of think about what you're going through because you're just too busy living it and breathing it and smelling it and just the chance of a lifetime to be in the dugout for those games. And He is most definitely a one-off. I don't think I've ever met anybody like him and ever will again. You were with him or against him. That difference wasn't even razor thin. It was thinner than that. And if you were against him, you better be able to duck, because you are about to feel the wrath of a seven-headed monster. You were right or you were wrong. He was, I can hear him laughing. I can see his smile. He was, he had two daughters. And basically, it's almost like he went through his professional career knowing that everybody he coached, he considered his son. And he treated so many of them like that. That's how they touched him in his heart. He was a clean freak. He was hyper, ADHD, OCD, whatever you can initialize he had. Couldn't sit still. He could not fathom the idea of me writing that book. And we were talking this a little bit before the show about to write that book. I mean, I was spending 12, 14-hour days for weeks and months on end. And he could not ever understand that concept of sitting still and doing something like that, because he was always just manic, just moving, just rabid. And like I said, a clean freak. On the road once, it wasn't at the Junior College World Series in 2010. It was the tournament right before that in Lamar, Colorado, the regional tournament. There was one night there where he had a buddy visiting. And it was Chambers, his buddy, and me in Chambers' hotel room. And we were eating pizza and wings, and we probably had a couple beers. And instantly, my stomach was grumbling, and I knew that I had about a second and a half to get to a John. And it was just one of those rare times. It was a red light, like, oh, emergency. Let's get. I almost had to start running. Well, I was in Chambers' room, so I went into his bathroom, and it wasn't pretty. It was not pretty. And I came out, and he was looking at me. If he had a sword, I wouldn't be here right now. I still can't believe he didn't just jump on me and attack me. I didn't, as well as I knew him, I did not know that part about him. And I think he made me get some rubber gloves and bleach and clean his toilet after it was flushed and everything. But the gall that someone would use his bathroom was beyond the scope of anything he could digest. And to take that one little step further, and I won't get too dirty or ugly, he would be at UNLV, and all of a sudden, he'd have to go to the bathroom, and I'm not talking about number one. He would leave his office at UNLV and drive all the way home to his home at Red Rock Country Club just to use the facilities. And it wasn't just, it was a certain facility at home, and then he'd come back to work. And so, ultra clean freak, and on the road with his guys, he would always tell them, no jeans, and when they had a function, they'd be in coats and ties. I remember at the 2010 JUCO World Series in Grand Junction, I remember Harper walking by me. We were on the way to a banquet, and he had his tie nicely tied. And I looked at him, and I almost wanted to touch the knot of his tie. I was kidding him. I said, is that a clip-on? And he looked at me like, this is a tie, bro. I tied this, brother. He's all of 17. And he said, I can tie my own tie. So it was the real deal. It was pretty funny. But he was just, and if you were on his side, there was nothing he would not do to support you. It was just to the nth degree, what do you need? He knew that this book would be such a jolt to my career, to my new career, to this, whatever this would become. And he was behind me. I'd never done this before, so I did not know the avenue. I didn't know how to get an agent. I didn't know how to pursue any of that. And he was just, man, just bust your butt on it. And it'll take care of itself. It will work out, and it did. It did. I just happened to meet person A, who introduced me to person B. This person knew an entertainment lawyer in L.A. who did some work with a literary agent in New York, and that's how I got the thing published. It was just happenstance, but he knew. he knew that this was worthy, this needed to be done, that I needed to do it, that the benefits would be beyond what I could imagine. And it was spot on. Everything was just exactly how he happened. And he had that ability with a lot of his kids to show them a future they had no idea of. Whether being a husband, a father, all of that, that real life stuff is what he was about, and making sure that his kids knew the importance of all that. Some, not all went that way, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying 100% of anybody who ever played for him loves him or adores him or it worked out well for them, but many of them, all that is true.
What year did they win the national title?
03.
So he was successful already.
He was very successful. In fact, that was the fourth year of the program when he was out there literally mowing the field, building the field, right, constructing the program. He made a vow that this program, he's not doing this just to do it. It's going to win a national JC title within 5 years. They did it in four.
Winner at Gorman, a winner at the JC level, yeah, when he took over that program, built it, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
So when he knew he was getting Bryce, and you were on board, was there ever a conversation during the season or early in the season where he's like, he knew what he had, he knew this was a chance to be not only another national championship winner, but the whole Bryce thing behind it was going to be huge. How good was that team, though? And you know, reading the book, if you didn't follow it, that team was awesome. Did he ever say to you, like, this can't end any other way other than winning a national title?
Man, Tim, there's so many angles to that question, to that inquiry. It's awesome. It's beautiful. Bryce owes that man a hell of a lot. And I say that because in fall ball, 09, Bryce had just turned 17. He had been on the cover of Sports Illustrated 6-7 months earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fall ball, so this is his first induction into the next level. You know, he was going from sophomore in high school to a freshman in junior college. Although the great thing about CSN at that time was it was a cocoon for him. He knew most of those guys growing up. He had played with them, played against them. That was what was really special about it, that they knew him and they would protect him and cover him. And, boy, it worked out great. I go back to that fall ball, however. There was one particular game. Bryce was struggling. And he had a golden sombrero in one of those games. And the last of those strikeouts was a 3-2 curve. Chasen Shreve, the lefty, was throwing it. And Ryan Scott was the catcher. Completely befuddled him, a 3-2 curve. The way it was painted, the picture was painted for me, was that in itself, that single pitch, that 3-2 curve that made him whiff, just about made him cry. Well, that night, he and his dad, Ron, they figure this is a little too much. This is a little too much pressure. The kid's about to break down. They called Chambers and said, we want to go back to Las Vegas High School for his junior year. This is a little too much. We maybe bit off a little more than we could chew. This is a lot. Maybe it's too much. We're thinking about wanting to do that. And Chambers said, you can't. I already cut you your stipend check. Each of those guys on scholarship get about $1,500. Tuition, books, travel expenses, whatnot, incidentals. That's the stipend check they get. So he had cut the Harpers a $1,500 check. And Ron said, but we haven't cashed it. So we can still do what we want to do. We still have options here. And Chambers said, no, I cut it. The fact that I cut it means you're committed. You can do whatever you want with it, but I cut it for you. So you have to stay here. You have to endure this. He has to weather all these storms. He's having a tough time now, but I promise you, it's going to get better, and he's going to excel, and he's going to be better for all of this. Well, Chambers told me when I started covering the team, we talked about that specific incident, and he said flat out he lied to the Harpers that they could have gone back to Las Vegas High School. The fact that he cut that stipend check did not mean they were committed. It was a flat-out, bald-faced lie.
Wow.
Chambers admitted it to me. But, again, he knew that, granted, there's a selfish reason. He's got a baseball team, and, of course, he wants Bryce Harper on that baseball team. Anybody would want that. But it was beyond that because he knew that that's what Bryce needed. And if you read the book, that's one of the beauties of the book, is that it wasn't all a red carpet for Bryce. He led he led all of baseball that year with the wood bat with 31 home runs. Nobody else anywhere, four-year, two-year colleges with metal bats. Nobody else hit 31 home runs. He did it with a wooden bat. That which just added to his cachet, which added to his luster, which is why Washington drafted him number one, and the rest is history. It was because it was because Chambers knew that that's what Harper had to do. He had to stick out that season. He would excel. He would do great. He would have some bumps in the road, and he'd learn from them. And it all worked out exactly like Chambers knew it would. So while I can sit here and say I owe a lot to Chambers, and Bryce can sure as hell say I owe a lot to him, there's a lot of guys in this city who owe a lot to Tim Chambers, who are now solid husbands, who are now well-rounded fathers, and who are going to succeed in whatever they're doing. So there's a lot of people in town who owe Tim Chambers a lot.
I read a lot of testimonials after it was announced he had passed away, and we don't have to name names, but one of the players got into some legal problems when he was in high school, and some kids died. He gave him a chance to be a part of the team, gave him another opportunity at life, and he said that, you know, he's never... I don't even really know how to describe it other than it wasn't for Tim Chambers. He doesn't know where he would be.
Absolutely. You know? Boy, Tim, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm pretty sure you're talking about Sean Larimer.
Yeah.
A horrific accident when he was very young, and he is now an assistant coach at CSN, doing great. He's recruiting, doing fabulous. And in 2010, he was sort of he was an assistant coach, but he was more of like an assistant to the assistant. He was kind of a gopher, but he was learning the ropes, and it was because Tim Chambers was giving him a chance to make something of baseball, but also to make something of his life, and he's doing great. He's running with it, and he'll be forever grateful.
Yeah,
there's so many stories like that, Tim. It's really astounding, the people he touched.
Did you stay in touch with him when he went to UNLV?
I did.
So what was the transition then? Why go that next level? And obviously, again, he made them something that they weren't since, what, Dalimore was there.
Yeah.
And that was a chance to actually, I think they went to regionals twice, I believe.
Went to the NCAA tournament twice.
Yeah.
They had, I don't think this was in the NCAAs, but they had a series you might remember. They went to Stanford, swept Stanford at Stanford. That's when you knew, boy, this is, he's right where he should be. And that just didn't, that did not work out. Sometimes he could be his own worst enemy. We don't have to detail it too much here, but he had a real troubled youth, Tim did, in Oklahoma. He had a father who, just the worst of all fathers, whatever you could imagine how bad this guy was, he was. He was an alcoholic, and he beat Tim, and that's just the... Boy, at the top of the story, that's just a horrible youth. He ended up moving to San Gabriel Valley with his mom and his sister. And at one point he told me he has been in about 150 fights in his life. I had someone call me last week and question that figure, and I had to amplify it. Basically, I would say that all of those, the vast majority of those fights probably occurred before he got out of college, and he ended up being a well-traveled collegian, too. He went to multiple colleges. He got kicked out of one college because he was at a party one night, and he played on the baseball team, and a football player spit on one of Chambers' black teammates, and Chambers left, got all the baseball team together. They all returned with baseball bats, and the fracas was on. It was just a melee from the way Chambers relays the story to me. Most of those fights occurred probably grade school, junior high, high school, and he told me specifically, God, I reread this in the book the other day, he specifically went after bullies, people picking on, you know, people, kids a lot smaller than them. He would zero in on bullies and take them out. I said, did you ever lose a fight? And he goes, no. So that gives you a little idea of what was inside Tim Chambers. A lot of issues. the bookend marks of his life were really, really tough. Each end, it was a sad ending. But I keep going back to his youth. Boy, it was just tortured. He once had a hamster cage, you know, plastic hamster cage. Well, I think four hamsters were in it. And as kids do, he moved on with other stuff and forgot about the hamster cage in his closet. A couple weeks go by. He remembers the hamster cage. He goes in there. Two of the hamsters had eaten the other two hamsters. He forgot to feed them. Mm-hmm. And he would see the little hamster corpse in there and the two that were just turned into little voracious monsters. That affected him to where he had visions of that. He was just so fearful of snakes also, to the point where his assistants would, they'd be golfing. And an assistant would kind of lay on the ground on the other side of his golf cart and just start making a hissing sound, which would make him jump 8 feet in the air.
Memorial tomorrow?
Tomorrow at noon, and I don't have the address. It's at an LDS church. I don't even remember what street it's off. I think maybe Sahara, and then the burial is going to follow.
Is that open to the public?
I believe so, but I would probably look in the review journal for those details. I'm sure they have it. Yeah.
Yeah, sad times. And like literally it caught everybody by surprise. Even, I mean, you know, you had a great relationship with him through his UNLV days.
Yep.
It's crazy. It's really crazy because I think when you look at so many great members of the youth, starting with his days at Gorman. I mean, the guy, like you said, there are more stories about what he did for people rather than people disliking him.
Absolutely. And that's what trumps everything is he had a huge heart. And to many people, he showed it. And there was a lot of beneficiaries of it.
Damon, let's take our last time out. Come back. We'll talk a little NFL football. And we'll move on through to a Monday morning. It's Heatwave Sports, Fox Sports Radio.
Keeps it to the end zone, touchdown. Play of the drive, rolling out. Jackson stops on the dime, slides past Van Noy, and is out of bounds.
That they take a shot with now.
So second and eight, and wow. To the end zone. Stop a yard short.
Now back to Heatwave Sports with Tim Oglesby and Tom Barton.
Some Lamar Jackson highlights, courtesy NBC, and the Ravens, a big home win over the previously undefeated New England Patriots on Sunday Night Football. Tim Oglesby, Rob Mish with you for the next, we're almost at that point, but Rob, you just before we get into the football, gaming today, your new thing, and issues come out every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday, yeah. This will be the second week. My debut column was last Wednesday, and it's great to be a part of what Steve Karp has put together at that magazine. It's a great staff. If you look at what the magazine was maybe 18 months ago, 2 years compared to what it is today, I actually found a copy from about 2.5 years ago today. And it's night and day. It's not the same deal. It's so professional now. And he has guys who are accountable. And it's interesting to read. It's topical. Everybody seems to be really on the ball with their picks. And it's, boy, what Steve Karp has done in just about 13 months has been just amazing. And I told him so a couple months ago. He really did a good job. Well, the magazine reaped a few awards at the State Press Association awards, accolades and all that. They really made a big splash. And I sent him a note. Man, you deserve everything you get. whatever trophies, whatever silverware you're putting away on the mantle. You deserve it all. You've done a great job. And he texted me back, well, what do you think about maybe writing for me, writing for the paper?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, that could work. What do you think? He goes, I don't know. What do you think? So we thought about it for a few weeks, and we finally hooked up and talked at the Sunset Station about a month ago. And he said, you know, I think I'd like you to write college hoops for me. We can come up with a name for the column and just have you have fun with it. You know, do insightful stuff, topical betting, pick four games a week, and just have fun with it. You'll add to the coverage. I shook his hand, and I said, well, it's about time. I've known him more than 30 years, and I said, that's about time I work with you. So it's going to be fun being a part of it. It's really dynamic. If you haven't seen it in a while, pick it up. You'll be amazed. And it's a must read every week, and not just for what I'm writing. The name of my column is The Gym Rat. Something kind of down and dirty. Stick my nose in the corner of the gym. Come up with gems that maybe people aren't looking at or looking for, and shed some light on some interesting trends or stats. It's a real good deal. Yeah, going to have a lot of fun with it.
And that's still available at all sportsbooks?
Every sportsbook in the land. Yeah. Yep. Comes out every Wednesday morning in Las Vegas.
So we are going to get to see your handicapping skills. And I believe, right, didn't you say you have to put four in a week? Is that how it works? And you kind of get a little screwed on the lines because I assume you have a press date. So
it's very difficult. That was one thing that when we talked about it, I said, oh, my gosh, how am I going to pull that off? You can, if you're covering college football, well, it's now Monday here in a few hours. You're going to be able to go, well, this morning you'll be able to go to any sports book and you're going to get the sheet of the week's college football games. There might be a couple Wednesday, Thursday, maybe a couple Friday, the big slate on Saturday. That's a pretty good advance notice of what's coming up, what the point spreads are, what the totals are. But in college hoops, it's obviously a whole different bird. I believe on Tuesday there's 140 games at least, and they're just going to start coming rapid fire. You don't get those odds 3 days in advance.
Right.
I'm not privy to Saturday's college hoops odds. I have a Tuesday morning deadline. I try to get my stuff to Steve Monday morning. The paper comes out Wednesday morning. So at the earliest, I can pick games on Wednesday night. How am I going to do that? And Steve said, he almost sounded like Chambers. He goes, you can do it. You know people. Well, I do. I ended up talking to Kenny White last week, and if the name rings a bell, it should. He's a longtime odds maker, linesman. He knows the business as well as anybody in town. He's been in it all his life. His dad was in it. So I talked to Kenny last week, and I said, listen, this might sound goofy, but if I give you four games on Sunday morning, four games that might not be taking place for a week, 8 days down the road, can you give me a projected line on these games, a projected spread on a projected total? I'll give you four games. And he said, sure. So that's what I'm using. It's the only thing I can do. He's as sharp as anyone. He has a good idea of what those numbers are going to do. He's got all the tables, all the statistics. He's got all the knowledge. And so I gave him four games this morning. A few hours ago, he sent me the lines, and that's the lines I'm using. And it could be probably different than the ones that come out, but I can only use what I can use. So
right.
That'll be a challenge. We'll see how I do. Yeah.
So what's it going to be like for you the next 6 to 8 months? A lot of TV surfing? You got the package? Whatever it may be, I mean, there's a lot of games, like you said.
Yeah, and there are a lot of games on, but I've got a couple casinos that are my home away from home, and I do a lot of work in them, and it's just at the casino is just it's the perfect white noise.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of be really efficient at writing and working. It's tough to do at home. It's too quiet. It's too familiar. But the casinos are just perfect. You know, I'm used to being in arenas, loud arenas, working under deadline with all that kind of stuff. The casinos, it's not too much noise, but it's just a perfect level. And so you'll see me out and about.
I think I see you at the South Point a lot. Am I right?
South Point. I'm mostly at Green Valley Ranch.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of right down the road from me. And obviously there's an array of screens. I can watch any game. I can watch eight games at once. So that's my wheelhouse. If you see me over there with the Milwaukee Brewers cap, come by and say hello. Tell me about your best bet and your worst beat.
It's the environment, too.
It is.
Those you know, like you said, you don't, you're not bumping hands or fists or shaking hands, but the people there are crazy.
just being in the environment rubs off, and you can't help but benefit from what you might hear, what you might see, what someone else might see and tip you off on. It's just it's a fantastic environment. It's great to be knee deep in that business with the book that just came out, with this Gaming Today column. I've got something else I'm on the brink on. I've been on the brink of for about 4 or 5 months. That's going to be big. And we're talking about another book that very well could have to do with the environment of a sports book, with the industry in some capacity. So there's a lot going on. So I'm knee deep in it.
So I know I follow you on Twitter. I know you keep an eye on NFL as well.
I do, but not as much as you might think. The dirty little secret, and I've been asking friends about this in recent weeks, and they don't exactly come out, they don't exactly tell me, but when pushed or prodded, they admit that the NFL is one difficult product to watch. And you were talking about the night game, and I was cognizant of it. It was actually on in my home as background noise, but I wasn't paying attention to it because I was deep into the Atlantic Sun, A-10. I was kind of coming up with the fifth reserve at Brown on basketball, and that's really where my attentions are. But, you know, I'm from Milwaukee, so I'm a Packer fan. I've got 4 framed pieces of stock in my office. So I was weaned on the Green Bay Packers, but it's even difficult to watch the Packers. And I'm not talking about today's debacle against the Chargers, but just on any given game, I have such trouble sitting there and trying to watch football, because in a minute, the red beanie bag is thrown, the reviews, yep, the ads, they come back. Oh, we still don't have a determination. More ads. I mean, that whole rigmarole has just taken its toll with me, and it's really, for me, it's really an unsavory product to watch.
Let me try to present it to you a different way.
good try. Let's see if you can do it.
Let's do this. How about, okay, what we saw last was Lamar Jackson have another big game for the Ravens. National TV, they beat the team, right? Yep. The Patriots are the team. They beat them, knock them off that undefeated perch. So the overreaction is going to be tonight on national radio and even tomorrow on local. Oh, what did we see from the Patriots?
Right.
There's holes there. I mean, the overreaction to one loss.
Right. First tough game, and it's on the road. It's in the Hornets' Nest in Baltimore, right, and look what happens. Oh, they're not what we thought they were.
Right. Team coming off a bye who had an extra week to prepare for New England, right, blah, blah, blah. I just think it's funny, if you were doing a show tomorrow and that becomes one of the big topics, is Patriots are false. Well, we all know that next week they win by 20 and all of a sudden this loss is forgotten about. Right. My whole thing is, when you're looking at creating stars in the NFL, Tom Brady, we already know what his resume is. So now it's Lamar Jackson's turn to take center stage. Yeah. And how can he handle national TV? How can he handle a big, big game? I think he came through pretty well tonight.
It's that little narrow window that everybody just wants to magnify, and they'll do it tomorrow. We're going to hear it all over tomorrow. You're exactly right. You hit the nail on the head, and he deserves it. Boy, he's a talented guy. He's fun to watch, and it would be nice to think that Baltimore could end up over New England and wind up in the Super Bowl, kind of show them that they're not invincible. Someone's got to do that one day, right? Oh, yeah, my God. But, you know, there was a – I'm not exactly oblivious to, I might paint a picture that I don't pay attention to anything in the NFL, but that's not the case. Something really big happened in the NFL today. Home teams against the spread dominated. I believe it was undefeated. Home teams were undefeated against the number today, which means the books probably made out. And I know specifically the Green Bay Packer game. The world was on the Packers. I think if you have anything to do with profit sharing in a sports book, you're looking great tomorrow morning, because those numbers are going to just be massive. A lot of money was on the Packers. I'm not sure if I heard this correct, Tim. Maybe you can confirm this. I thought I heard that of any single game in the entire NFL so far, more money was on Green Bay than any other single game this entire season. -3, -4. Of course, they lost, so there was a lot of money that went to the books today on that specific game.
So there were 3 games that I think I heard from different people as well, that the public was on. It was the Packers, the Chiefs, or the Vikings over the Chiefs, and the Ravens over the Pats. So just going by that, the books still made a ton of money.
And then when you factor in, I know this is nickel and dime, but when you factor in those parlays and teasers, which just every Joe six-pack is attracted to, those are just such money makers for the house.
Absolutely.
You throw all that into the equation, and I don't know if it was a red letter day for the books, but or epic. I don't know what words they would use, but it would be interesting. Maybe I'll send Jay Cornegay a text tomorrow morning and see what he says, exactly how he terms it, because this was a big one. This was a great day for the books.
Well, I appreciate you coming on tonight. Let everybody know about the new book, where they can get it, and like you said, we'll come hang out with you at GVR.
Yeah, man. I didn't know you'd want me for the whole 3 hours. Yeah. I'm glad I could reach down and dig for some extra stamina. So this was fun. Always is.
The title of the book, Sports Betting.
Sports Betting for Winners.
For winners. Amazon.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any fine institution that sells books online, you can get it there. And if you get it, drop me a note on Twitter, R-O-B-M-I-E-C-H. Let me know what you think, and have fun with it. It was meant to be entertaining as it is informative. So hopefully that comes across.
And we can check you out every Wednesday in the Gaming Today as well.
Yep.
The Gym Rat.
Yes, sir.
Once again, thank you for coming on tonight, man. We'll do it again.
Absolutely. Rest easy, Coach Chambers.
Yep. For Rob, Mish, Tom Barton, Damon, it's Tim Unglesby. Have a great sports week. We will talk to you Saturday night right here on Heatwave Sports. Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Good night.